You are now listening to Alias, Smith, and the Roy.
Yo, this part two. All right.
Alias, Smith, and Leroy. Yeah. We're back. We can spend a lot of time setting this up. This is part two of our incredible conversation.
Yes.
With talent show business manager extraordinaire.
Yeah. Artist at heart.
I know. Failed comedian.
These damn failed comedians, man.
Failed comedian Barry Katz. Yeah. This is a wonderful conversation.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah, those who, those who can do, those who can't teach.
Or those who can't manage.
Yeah, something like that.
No, he's great though, man.
No, this is an incredible conversation with Barry. I mean, we throwing stones at him, but we know he'd appreciate it.
Oh man, he was taking it too. Doing bits.
I think there were some stones being thrown back.
Yeah, a little ping pong.
Yeah, that was like a straight up ping pong.
He heckles the room.
I'm thinking I might fire my managers and hire him just so I can fire him and go back to them.
That'd be great.
So I could be part of one of his stories.
That's funny. 72 hours. 72 hours with Barry.
I know.
That'd
right?
be funny.
See if he can get a Tracy special record. Or something.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Barry's got some incredible stories. We had a great part one, so I know you guys, hopefully you listened to that. If you did not listen to part one, then you're starting at the wrong part.
Yes.
Anyway, this is Alias Smith and Leroy. You should be commenting on this podcast. You should be subscribing to it or putting this in your playlist on Stitcher, you know.
Or iTunes.
Yeah, you. I'm talking to you.
Yes, you listening. They go, I'll do it later. No, do it now. Yeah, now is later.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Why wait?
You're sitting there with the thing in your hand or you got a computer in front of you. Just go and
subscribe.
That's all you got to do.
That's all you got to do.
Yeah. And then write a little review.
You'll see all of us.
Done.
Season one, season two. Come on now. Don't sleep.
Yeah. So, you know, some good stuff out there. But this is Barry Katz. This is part two.
If you didn't listen
to part one, go back and listen to that. Then listen to this.
Yes.
Do it however you want to do it. We ain't the boss of you.
Yeah.
Barry Katz, Alias Smith and Ray. Here we go. Boom. Here's a question. So you represent all of these different artists.
Yes.
And so with the knowledge that nobody else wants anybody else to win, and you have to manage, you know, different levels and of career and success, how do you navigate that space when, you know, Owen's going to call you up and go, hey, how come this guy got this? Or someone's going to call you and go, hey, how come Owen got that? What are you doing for me? How do you as a manager deal with, you know, all of those personalities and all those wants and needs and desires?
Well, I think honestly, that's one of the skill sets. If I were to analyze myself, I would probably say that, you know, like you said, there's certain things that you're great at and there's certain things that you're not so great at. And the reason why a relationship ends, whether it's a marriage or a business association or a management relationship or even in family, like where you stop talking to your mom or your dad or whatever, it normally happens because one person doesn't feel safe anymore, doesn't feel as safe as they used to feel. And so I point to the relationships that have stopped working for the artist with me is because for some reason, whatever's happening at that point, they don't feel as safe as they felt a year earlier or 2 years earlier. And there's either something about the way I'm representing them or the way I'm presenting the people that other people that I'm representing or something in it that makes them feel in a situation where they don't feel as comfortable and feeling as good about things. And they'll feel better about either being alone. There's so many people who stopped working with me that didn't even hired a manager. They went managerless for Chappelle doesn't have a manager. You know, a lot of people do not have managers, and it's this weird thing where it's. I think they tried to have certain managers, some of them, and others have gone to managers. But the fact is that when I look at David Steinberg or and that company, they've represented Robin Williams and Billy Crystal for I think 40 years.
Right.
I mean, that's something that any manager just dreams of and wanting to have that kind of relationship but you know, for some reason it can be elusive. You know, I work with Jay Moore for almost 25 years and that's just a wonderful thing. And are there times where Jay Moore has said, you know, I should fire that guy? Of course. And just like if I were to put you on the witness stand, I would say, are there times when you've wanted to fire your management company, 3 Arts? The answer is, of course. It's these long-standing things. But for some reason, you stuck it out, you did whatever, and there were benefits and however it was. And there'll be certain people that fire them as well. You know, I had a podcast with Mark Maron. You know, he was represented by them, and it didn't go. And he left, and he ended up working with a manager who he actually didn't have any training in stand-up comedy, didn't have any training in anything.
Right.
And he felt like, but she had passion for him, and he actually helped her learn the business, right, which is a very unusual story. But the fact is that it's all about feeling safe, and in any job you're in, you have to make people feel safe. When you go in and you pitch your show, okay, basically, I think we talked about this a little bit. You're going in, and you said before, I'm trying to convince them that my idea is the right idea. Basically, you're walking in, and you're saying, give me your fucking money. Right. I want your money.
Right.
I have ideas. I want to use your money to make them.
Right.
Well, let me explain something to you, to anybody out there listening, okay? You want to know how valuable money is? Try borrowing some fucking money from anybody. Right. Okay? It's hard. So people are trained to say no, so you have to make them feel safe with their investment.
Right.
That's what it is. You know, you go to the bank, you ask for a loan, you have to make them feel safe that you're going to deliver and do whatever you want to do. You want to do a comedy special at Showtime? Do you think they're going to give you the money all up front? No, they'll give you a little bit here, and then you deliver, they'll give you a little bit there. Then 9 months later, if they decide to do it, they'll give you the money there. And that's just it. So in any profession, it's all about safety. And for me, I think that one of my weaknesses probably in that area would be that I want to be able to continue to make artists feel safe, even though people around them might be rising or here and there, and being able to orchestrate things in a certain way that they feel comfortable and safe that things are going to be right and everything's going to be okay. I mean, there's things that I've done for artists that I'm so proud of that I can't even. You know, working with Whitney Cummings, three television shows in one, you know, year.
Time,
I mean,
right,
you know, these are things that you know, Dane Cook, you know, selling out two shows at Boston Garden and Madison Square Garden in one 10-day period, 60,000 seats.
Wow.
You know, it's. Doing having 4 people on Saturday Night Live when you've never even been hardly in the business before.
Right.
Having somebody host the premiere episode of Saturday Night Live, that's just, I mean, being in a situation where you can, you know, let's just say Tracy Morgan and the things that happened to him in his life with what he came from and where he came from, living in the projects with 4 kids on welfare. And then, you know, being in a situation where he gets the test for SNL and it's at the comic strip and he confides in me and he says, Barry, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've never performed in front of a white audience in my life. Mm. Help me. Can you prepare me for this? Because I don't know if I can do it. And he came to my office every day and there was an empty office next to mine. And we ran over the material over and over again, like tirelessly all morning, then broke for lunch all afternoon for like 5 days before the test. And then I get the call the day of the morning of the test from Marcy Klein from Saturday Night Live saying, Barry, I can't thank you enough. Lauren and I want to thank you because we're testing 16 people tonight at the comic strip. And it's unbelievable. You have 7 people testing. 7
wow.
of your clients are testing. Barry, I can't thank you enough. Oh, thank you, Marcy, so much. Listen, I have to talk to you about one quick thing. I'm sure. What is it? Lauren thinks 16 comedians are too much, and he wants me to cut off one of the comedians. And I've looked at the list, and I've sort of perused it over and over again and then analyzed the content of every artist, and I've decided that I'm going to cut somebody off the list, and it's one of your guys, but since you have 7, I think you'd be okay.
Right.
I'm like, oh, come on, Marcy, don't do it. No, Barry, we have to do it. Well, who is it? Tracy Morgan.
Wow.
And I said, Marcy, you cannot do this to me. You can't do this. I've been working with this guy. He's ready. She's like, Barry, I made my decision.
Wow.
I'm like, Marcy, no. Click. Okay, so now this is before email. This is before this is before anything.
So hang up.
So I have a few different options to get him on the show or not. I can give up and call Tracy right there, or I can not take no for answer. I can fight as hard as I can. So I started typing, and these were the typewriters with the ball, you know,
right,
the electronic
type
with the whiteout and the tape and whatever.
Right.
I'm typing letters. I'm faxing the letter to her. I'm putting it in a FedEx envelope and having it hand-delivered, and I'm leaving a message every hour for her that she's not taking.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I keep faxing new letters, calling, leaving messages, because I don't want to call him, but he's got to be at the club at like 7 o'clock.
Shit. What time was it now?
At like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, after I faxed three things, messengered three things, and called about 10 times, a call comes in. And back then, I just didn't have many assistants or anything like that, so I picked up the phone. I'm like,
hello. Barry Katz's office.
And I thought it was Saturday Night Live. I was excited. It wasn't. I hung up. I'm like, fuck, I'm go back to my thing. I said, fuck, I got to try one more time. I call the number to Marcy's office. She picks up.
Wow.
I said, hi, Marcy. Oh, thanks for picking up. She's like, Barry, what the fuck is the matter with you? You fucking tech, you're faxing me, you're messenger, you're calling, you're harassing me. This is Saturday Night Live. You cannot do this. I'm like, Marcy, I just have to tell you that I really think that Tracy's right. She's like, shut the fuck up and listen to me. I'm like, listen, Marcy, please, you have to talk to, I have to, Barry, shut the fuck up. I'm like, no, Marcy, I'm not shutting. I really, we have to get, Barry, shut the fuck up. And I stop, and she says, I'm putting him on.
Yay.
And I don't want to hear about this anymore. I don't want to talk to you anymore. Burn my fucking phone number.
Wow.
And so I don't tell Tracy. I go to the club. There's 16 people that go on at the club. There's one person.
Is the audience all white?
Audience all white. Goes on, he kills. He gets the call to go to 30 Rock for the next round of it.
Right.
Goes there, and there's only one of those 16 people who gets Saturday Night Live, Tracy Morgan.
Wow.
What did Marcy say to you after that?
The thing that you learn about the business is the navigation. And the one thing that you should never do is ever say to anybody or allude that I told you so.
Right.
It's always their idea. And it's always the thing that, you know, because in the end, it is their idea. They rely on their instincts. And yes, she turned it around and she gave me the opportunity to turn the no into the yes. But she gave me that opportunity. So to say that it wasn't her decision to have Tracy Morgan perform that night would be shallow. It was her decision. She decided and she weighed all the facts, and I was just presenting a ton of evidence as to why he should go on. But if you look at it that way, I put full responsibility on Marcy Klein for believing in my passion, but also believing in her instincts to say, hey, you know something? Maybe there's something there in this kid. And maybe what I saw originally, this guy fighting for, I should. And she hired him, and I look at it, yes, I did a great thing, but Marcy Klein did a great thing because she assessed the situation and she didn't stick with a decision. She was able to change and change the pattern if she needed to, which is what a great executive does. Bad executives are the ones that stand by things and they don't look at all the variables. And so it's a lesson of persistence and passion and fighting for something and turning no's into yes's, which you have to do. And then having an artist, Tracy Morgan, go into a situation where he was the ultimate underdog, but he exceeded all expectations and pretended the people watching had the highest fucking expectations. And he delivered there, and he delivered at 30 Rock, and he deserved everything he got. And that's one of my proudest moments ever.
Nice. Who were the other 15?
Fucking job. He booked the fucking job.
Who were the other 15 that didn't stand a chance?
I think that's another podcast.
All right.
This is
what Owen has.
I want to ask a question. Goddamn
it! Ask a question. Right. Well, I was gonna say just your combined can't efforts. You and Marcy you. Klein, y'all got Tracy on SNL. That's amazing.
Yes. So I want to ask. I'm a fan of your podcast. It's something that you always ask all of your guests. You just told us one of your greatest accomplishments. Would you share one of your greatest disappointments in all the years that you've been doing this?
Well, I mean, clearly how much Ollie has talked today, that's been a huge disappointment. The knockdown dragout fight that him and his producer just had, that was a big disappointment.
Over volume.
We took a little pause. You guys don't hear it in the recording, but we had some volume issues we need to get settled out.
The volume has been the same the entire time.
Anyway,
it's a problem of perception.
See what I deal
you know,
with
you
Mary.
Can make a lot of money on some kind of phone recorded things. Anyway,
Connie has a great voice. Oh, she's been trying to get in the voiceover
for
a
way.
While. Yeah,
you can represent her.
I could, yes. I could.
but
I don't want to get fired again. What do you want to ask me? What I didn't really get the. You want to ask me what my biggest disappointment is?
What are one of your biggest disappointments?
Well, I think always the disappointments come when you put your heart and soul into anything and it doesn't go the way you want it to go.
Right.
I think that's always going to be a situation. So
what are you trying to
I'm trying to do something.
He's trying to put his phone in a pocket and he doesn't have a
pocket. Have
are there pockets pocket? Inside the
sweatsuit?
Sweatsuit? He's looking for a suit pocket inside a sweatsuit.
I got it. I'm sorry. So it's the things that don't go well, the things that are so disappointing to me. I'll tell you the general ones and the specific ones. Mm-hmm. The general things that are disappointing as a manager or producer is when, I want to say this the right way. We're all wanting one thing. We want control. Right. When we have more control, we're happy, and when we have less control, we're sad.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can control how much money we make, who our friends are, who we sleep with, where we live, how much money we have in our account, what kind of car we drive,
mm-hmm.
you know, our schedule, we're thrilled. And every time there's a variable that comes in that we're not in control of, it becomes more and more disappointing and more hard to manage no matter where we are in the world. So for me, one of the things I love about the podcast that I do, Industry Standard, is that, again, I ask people to do it. Most all of them say yes. Some do say no. And I keep hammering away until I get them there, hopefully. But for the most part, I'm in control. I'm like almost like a stand-up comedian. You know, you get to write, direct, star, and produce your own show.
Mm-hmm.
It's different every time, but you get to do it, and you get to do it your way. And then when you get the feedback and people write to you and they FedEx you letters and they tell you these things that, or you literally get an email from, let's say, somebody is... who I respect as much, like let's say Jimmy Miller from Rome.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Rome with his family, and he's emailing you saying, yeah, some of the, this podcast, I've heard about it, and it's doing well. I can't do it because I'm, but I would, it means something to you. And the times that you have disappointments are when you can't control the variables, and you're fighting so hard to control them, and no matter how hard you try to fight the no's,
mm-hmm.
you can't win at the time that you want to win. Now, today, I just found out that, I've done 30-hour specials.
Mm-hmm.
30-hour specials. I feel like I could do an hour special in my sleep. But there are certain people that I work with or I try to get hour specials for who deserve an hour special beyond recognition, and I'll get a no from this network, a no from that work, a no here, and then I'll just keep going back and going back, and the artist is like, where's my hour special? How come I don't have an hour special? I mean, how is it possible that you can't get me an hour special? You've done 30 hour specials. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you just want to say, you just want to crawl under a rock at some time and say, Jesus, I can't take this because I'm not in control because I don't have the money. They have the money, so I have to convince them to give me the money. And today was a day after 11 months of fighting for a special that I got a contract for somebody to do a special. And so it's exciting, but the disappointment of knowing that you have to fight so hard to get something. Mm-hmm. You know, Owen Smith has a specialty shot with all iPhones. Mm-hmm. It'll be the first show ever to be all iPhones. And I'm out every day, I'm fighting to get this thing sold, and I will sell this special if it fucking kills me. But the fact is, is that there's times when you're like, have you watched it yet? Oh, no, I haven't gotten to that yet. Oh, okay. And you just like, you can't say what you want to say because you know they're busy, just like I'm busy. Look, I have 2,370 emails in my email box. 2,370. There's no way it's possible that I could ever, you know, be as efficient as I want to be or as I would want to have. But I know what's in there. I know what's going on, and I have an assessment of what's happening. But the fact is that I'm not in control of it unless I just delete everything. So the point I'm trying to make in a long-winded way with your thing is that everything that happens that I'm not that I don't feel like I'm in control of, where there's people behind the scenes that, you know, trying to take me down, because there's people behind me always trying to cut me down. There's people always walking up to clients that I work with and saying, "Hey, you're with Barry. Oh, he's a good guy. Listen, you know, if ever you're not happy or this or that, it's like literally like when you're representing clients, it's like those clients are in Vegas and they're in this beautiful hotel room and you're married to them, but you're back in Los Angeles and there's a beautiful model with a bathrobe knocking on the door, and you open the door with a little chain and she says, "Listen, Owen, I'm here and you can do whatever you want to me for as long as you want. Just let me in and I'm yours." And there's three kinds of men in that situation. There's the guy who closes the door and says, "Thank you so much, but I'm in a relationship."
And he goes to whack off.
That's right. There's the guy who opens the door and lets her in and says, "Listen, come on in. Let's just talk, but we're not going to touch each other.
When you leave, I'm a whack off."
And there's the guy who invites the girl in and says, "Hey, listen, let's do whatever you want," and then calls their significant other up and either tells them the truth or doesn't have the same relationship anymore. And so when you're producing, you want everything to go your way. You want, you know, you want the Whitney show to go 100 episodes. You want Bill Bellamy's show where they promised 104 episodes to go 104 episodes, mm-hmm. not 28 episodes where you're waiting around for a year to try to figure out when the next group of episodes are going to go. And so, and when somebody fires you, you are disappointed because you know the work you've done. You know, look, you know, it's weird, you know, being a manager, being in my position, it's sort of like being an anorexic looking in the mirror and saying you're fat. You technically, you know your place in the world. But sometimes you look and you say, am I really where I'm supposed to be or is where it's supposed to happen? I know my place.
You're saying you have those questions about yourself as a manager?
I never have questions about myself of being a great manager. There's no doubt in my mind that you could bring a homeless guy in here off the street and you give me 3 months with him, and I'll get him on television. I can, I know what I can do. I've done, you know, the evidence is there. I don't worry about it. There isn't any.
Give it up for Viaduct Mike.
How's everybody doing?
There isn't any comedian I know of out there that's going to say, oh, that Barry Katz, he's a shitty manager. Maybe there, I don't see it. I mean, the evidence speaks for itself. You right. have your body of work and what you do. But the evidence also suggests that, you know, people have grown dissatisfied with the relationship or where their career is going and wanted to make a change too in certain instances. And those are the disappointing. Tracy Morgan, just to let you know, one of those disappointments coming full circle with Tracy Morgan again. So I used to be roasted at my comedy club. I owned a comedy club, the Boston Comedy Club in Greenwich Village, around the corner from the Comedy Cellar, and the comedians would roast me on my birthday or certain special right. occasions, and it was like, I loved it. I love when comedians, I just think the honesty of shitting on
I
somebody.
I never performed there.
I did.
Yeah.
And he used to do a black night on Sundays yeah. with Will Sylvans
with
and
Talent.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like Anne Frank's Comedy Attic, the place was. Yeah. You mentioned Talent. I just have to say this because it's just
comedy.
You know, you just remind me of something, knowing that the basketball game was on tonight.
Yeah.
In 2008, I went to the Celtics when they won the World right. Championship in Game 6 against the Lakers. And Talent had this thing. It wasn't even a joke, but it was like, he was like, and I can't do his accent, but he said something effect of, you know, the Celtics Game 6, they're up by 40 points. Phil Jackson calls a timeout with 1 minute left in Boston Garden. They're down by 40. What the fuck do you say to your team as a coach when you're down by 40?
Gave it a shot.
All right, guys, take a knee. Take a knee. Okay, gather around. Okay. Where's the fucking exits? How do we get out of here? Let's get a path. Let's figure out where to go. Anyway, so Tracy, so we're having this roast. I'm getting the shit kicked out of me in this roast. Right. And a lot of, you know, at that time, a lot of black comedians didn't really know the concept of a roast.
Right.
It wasn't on television. There wasn't anything. The only time you could see a roast was really at the Friars Club or something right. like that. So the understanding of the genre wasn't there.
Because they were too young to have seen the Dean Martin stuff.
Yeah. And so Tracy Morgan walks in to the club while these guys are roasting me, and they're killing me, and people are laughing hysterically, whatever. And he tells the host he wants to go on next, and he goes up to the podium, and he's like almost in tears. And he's like, you motherfuckers don't know. You got to get yourself a white Jewish manager. This guy saved me. I was living in the projects. I have 4 kids on welfare. Now I'm living on a high rise on the river. I'm on Saturday Night Live. Fuck you motherfuckers. Barry Katz. I love you, Barry Katz. And he walks out of the club with a tear in his eye. 4 days later, my phone rings in the office. I pick it up. He's like, hey, Barry, this is Tracy. I'm like, hey, Tracy, how you doing, buddy? I'm good, man. Listen, I just want to let you know I need to make a change.
Damn.
You know, I don't really think things are going the way I want them to go. And, you know, you're a great guy, but I need to go in another direction.
Wow.
And I did something that I am embarrassed that I did, and I've never done anything like it since.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I didn't respond. I sort of listened, and I told him that I thought that, you know, I was, you know, done a good job for him, and that I wish he'd had let me know what it is that he'd like me to change.
Right.
And I would be honored to give a certain amount of grace period to try to change it, but he said he was making the change. And so that night, I went to my VHS machine and my dubbing machine, and I took the videotape of the roast, and I got to his portion of the roast.
Right.
And I queued it up, and I put another tape in the bottom deck, And I punched them both in, and I pressed record.
Right.
And I recorded Tracy's roast. And when it was done, I stopped it. I didn't put a label on it. I put it in a FedEx envelope, and I sent it to his address.
Oh. Mm.
And that was my way of saying, this is what you said.
Right.
I was, and 3 days, 4 days later, this is what I'm not.
Right.
So that was a huge disappointment. But on a positive side, you know, he just wrote his book, and in his book and on Howard Stern promoting it, he spent a lot of time talking about how he credited me with a lot of his success in Saturday Night Live. So that was a nice thing. And
nice.
And I will always wish him well, and I hope that he has an incredible, fast recovery. And, you know, I don't wish anything bad on anybody. I know it's hard to believe, but I don't, because I feel like...
Why do you think that would be hard to believe?
Because I think in our business, a lot of times it's just... There's so much darkness. Like, if you're a comedian and you... Let's just take Los Angeles, and you're living in this town, and you have basically three main places where mm-hmm. you're going to garner relevance.
Right.
And those three places are going to be the Improvisation on Melrose, the Laugh Factory on Sunset, and the Comedy Store on Sunset.
Right.
And there's only those three places where you're ever going to get any respect from anybody. It doesn't matter. You could have the greatest set in the world at the laundromat that does comedy, or the Hooters, or even Comedy Union. It doesn't matter. If you're a comedian and you want to win and you want to get to the next level, you have to kill 10 times in your home comedy club to where every audience member says you were the best, every busboy, every mm-hmm. waiter, every waitress, the manager, and the comedians that fucking hate your guts, mm-hmm. all of them would say you had the best set. And if you have the best set 10 times in a row, get a fucking helmet, because you're going places. Mm-hmm. But when you're in these clubs, there's a darkness. And the darkness, there's a almost like a bell curve of darkness. So at the Comedy Store, it's like... almost like this overwhelming cloud of darkness. The comedians have, you know, it's almost an open feeling of like no one wants you to win, and it's verbalized. It's almost like it's a...
Do you find that to be true, Owen? Because you work there a lot.
Which is one of the most surprising things in the world.
I know,
is
right?
That Owen Smith works at the Comedy Store. That's like one of these things is not like the other.
Got his name on the wall.
My name on the wall. Well, it was when I first went to the Comedy Store. That was true. That was in the early 2000s.
And I don't want you to get yourself in trouble, because worried about myself.
No. When I first went there, I felt the darkness, and I did not. I was actually afraid of that place. I didn't even want to be a part of that, because me being who I am, I just didn't want to be in that energy. Then, ironically, years later, when Everybody Hates Chris told me he was going to the Comedy Store, and I went and I watched him work out in the OR. And I go, oh, I get it. This is the only room in L.A. that allows you to be an artist, like allows you to create. You're not penalized for it. So I was like, I got to get in here, just because I needed a place where I could just develop new thoughts and just get it right out there. Like at the Improv, I didn't feel like, and the amount of spots you could get. Just,
right.
It was three rooms right there. I go, you can work out anything here. This is great. So... The time I came around, there had been a change in the guard, and I was actually a more respected comedian.
Right.
I was unaware of that. It's just time in the game. So I was able to sidestep a lot of that darkness. And I actually was more focused and had a stronger point of view, and I knew what I wanted to do. So I would go do my work and leave and just let the work speak for itself. So in that thing, I ended up, it was cool for me. You know?
And then, you know, the next spot that if you're looking at the level of darknesses, if I could, you know, if I could just, you know, go with this, there's certain places that are a reflection of how they operate and how they exist are a reflection of how the vibe is. You know, they say the president of company and all, you know, from the head of the fish down or whatever. So you walk into the Comedy Store, nothing has changed since 1980. Everything is the same. It doesn't appear, if there have been improvements, it doesn't appear like there's been any improvements. So there's literally been no effort made to improve the level of the experience.
Right.
It's just 30 years of the same thing. You go in the green room, there's like a table that looks like it's been used for several hundred lines of cocaine. It's like black lacquer. It's just, you know, it's just the way it is, the thing. The Laugh Factory, Jamie Masada is a fascinating character. And he's, you know, he's a polarizing guy because I think that, you know, whenever you're a comedian, you're in a situation where if somebody doesn't believe in your talents, it's easy to go and shit on them or say things in the world. But Jamie Masada, the one thing that nobody can take away from him is he does great things for the community. Every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, there's right. these incredible dinners for the homeless. He has these shows for the homeless. The comedians come on, they serve the food. And he, you know, at Christmas time, there's always an amazing gift for every comedian that works there, and not just a trinket or a keychain, a jacket or a briefcase or anything like that. It's just he's an amazingly generous person to his comedians. He's fiercely loyal to them, and he's made several improvements, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars inside the club. Now, I say that, and, you know, to these two clubs here, I don't have a relationship with Mitzi Shore. I don't really have a relationship with Jamie Masada, but I do acknowledge that I have tremendous respect for what he's done there and what he's trying to do and how he's trying to improve it. The Comedy Store, I can't really fault anybody there at this time because Mitzi isn't well, and there's not an infrastructure to do anything the way they need to do it. At the Improv, there's more hope as things go there for comedians because it's being built. They also have done a lot of work on the Improv to make it better, and they've created a situation, an environment where comedians can hang out and be themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, at the Comedy Store, at the Original Room, you can hang out and be yourself as a comedian. In the Improv, in the side room or whatever you call it, you can hang out and be a person with a drink in your hand and hanging out with your buddies. And the illusion is created there that everybody wants everybody to win, even if they don't. It's like a false illusion, but the fact is there's a camaraderie there that they're trying to create, and I think they're doing a great job as well. Whether it succeeds or not, who knows? But you feel like there's more hope when you're at the Improv because you know that they have 19 or 20 or 25 clubs, and you know if you hang out long enough, as Neil Brennan would say, every single thing positive that ever happened to me happened by hanging out at a comedy club.
Wow.
And it's because you're hanging out with the devil and you're hanging out with the good guys,
right?
And you're mixing in between, and it's a fascinating thing. And if you're an artist, you have to learn how to be able to go on, give a great performance, and get the fuck out. And if you are going to hang, don't be afraid to listen.
Right.
And don't, once you start hearing your own voice too much, get right. get the fuck out.
Yeah, get to the car.
Right. Owen?
Yeah, I would say about the Improv that Rita has been very, very kind to me. I don't work the Laugh Factory, so I don't know anything about that. I mean, I've done it like 3 times.
And this is the thing, though. This is the thing for all the comedians listening. You know, there's a lot of people, again, a club says in their actions that they don't book you, and you give up. But if I were to tell Owen right now that I had his fiance hostage and in 10 days, if Owen didn't have 20 spots at the Laugh Factory this summer booked,
oh, yeah, I could
that, that she would never be seen again, he would have 20 spots at the Laugh Factory.
Oh, yeah, easily.
But the thing is, comedians like Owen, and I'm going at you now,
okay,
they give up because rejection hurts, and when somebody says, I don't want you, it stings, and so you have two choices. You can fight to prove them wrong, or you can just walk away and go to the other club and take your ball and go home. And that's what most comedians do when they when a club doesn't give them the respect they deserve. I'll tell you a quick story, both of you. When I ran the Boston Comedy Club, I hired a manager. Her name was Gina Savage. And this was later on, and she was so proud. She put an availability line in and was so excited, and comedians were calling in. She says, I want to take you to lunch, Barry. I want to tell you what's happening this weekend. And she took me to lunch, and she said, look, Barry, I have the whole weekend booked. Look at all these people called in, and
right.
and they're working the club. And I looked at the list, and I just picked up the list, and I just was like, and then I just threw it back at her on the table. And I said, and they were all great comics.
Right.
And I said, Gina, I don't want any of those comics this weekend. And she says, what are you talking about? These are all great comics. They called in.
Right.
They called into the availability line. They want to work at your right. club.
Right.
And I paused and I looked at her in the eyes and I said, I don't want the people to work at my club who want to work at my fucking club. I want people to work at my club who don't want to work at my club. Those are the people I want there this weekend. Get me those people. And it's the same thing as like, it's it, you know, if these clubs know you're upset at it, it's hard. So it's a hard navigation. They know you're resentful or whatever, they've won. So you just have to figure out and kill them with kindness and get in and show them that you deserve to be in.
Right.
And that's the way it
it's
is.
It's a double-edged sword, though. It's like, also live my life, never go where you're not wanted.
Yeah, but if I never went where I wasn't wanted, I wouldn't be at this podcast.
That's why you're here. No, I wanted you here, but Ali was like, ah.
The voice of doom over here.
Well,
I gotta be the voice of doom. I thought I was
you
the
got
positive
no spots
one.
At the podcast.
You know what's fascinating about it being a guest here, okay? The producer has this beautiful bottle of Pellegrino water.
Oh, wow.
Ali yeah. Leroy has this incredible bottle of juice. Raw juice. Okay, Owen Smith has this great, huge water
smart
bottle
water.
Of smart water. And Barry Katz has a fucking dirty glass of water with a pitcher with some Kit Kats in front of it. This is how you're treated here at the Fabulous Podcast.
We got all this from the green room at the Comedy Store.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, man. This is all 20 years old.
All right, this you got more questions?
Please, come on. Now's your chance.
Oh, now's
man.
My chance to ask more
shine.
Questions.
I would say,
all right, you don't
that's
have
funny,
more questions.
Just be dead air. No, I want to ask you, how do you deal with rejection in that way? I mean, because you are someone who's relentless.
I love rejection.
I know you do. Now, here's the thing that happened before you walked in here. Ali was talking about how he hates the business part of show business. He's not a fan of it.
Yeah, I don't like show
I think
business.
You'd love it. Like, you'd love that.
I love turning no's into yeses. I love exerting my will on something that I believe in.
Yeah.
And the examples are never ending of that. And that's those are the things that I'm most proud of. I mean,
but that's a,
you know,
that's a skill.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like we were talking about Jay Moore. This is something that happened that was... It's just an amazing moment. Now, you talk about putting the time in, and if you put the time in, you'll be rewarded. Mm-hmm. Or if you're great, you'll be rewarded. And I really believe this, and I always talk about in the podcast about being undeniable. And the thing is, you can't lose if you're undeniable. Even if you're passed over or people shit on you or they don't give you respect. Look, Wes Welker, okay, was a wide receiver for the Patriots. He had 30 more catches than anybody else in the league, okay? He was the best. He was making $10 million a year. His contract is up. He's nice. He's a great teammate. He's a great player. No problems. They offer him $5 million a year. Okay? And he said, listen, I want to stay here. Just give me a little more. Just give me $1 million more a year. No, $5 million or take your ball and go home.
Right. Wow.
But because he was undeniable and because he was so great, it didn't matter that he didn't get the respect. It didn't matter that they shit on him. Because there was 20 more teams that wanted him, and he had his choice where to go, and he went to Denver with Peyton Manning, and he got this $6 million a year.
Right.
So even if you get shit on and you're undeniable, you're always going to find a place to work. Ali, listen, you know this. If I put out an email to every studio and every network tomorrow and said, Ali LaRoy wants to work, you'd have 5 job offers. I mean, let's face it. I mean, let's face the facts, because people know you're great, even if you might not get the respect always that you want or you might want, and I don't know if that's true or not. That's the case, and that's the way it's always going to be. And so the thing is that you have to be in these situations where you can be that way and you're going to get anywhere you want to go. And I don't know if I answered your question totally the way you wanted it to.
No, it's fine.
But, I mean, that's just it. It's like you can't fail if you do this great work and you just can't do. Oh, and look, I don't have to tell you this. You've gone out for auditions in your life. You booked commercials. You've tested for shows. But the bottom line is, you know, however old you are and how many auditions you've done in your life for sitcoms, the bottom line is you haven't become a series regular on a television show yet. Mm-hmm. If you had last year, the year before, the year, if you'd booked 2 sitcoms in a row like Tone Bell, and it might be like, well, I don't get the opportunities, or people don't audition me, or I don't have the best agent, or I don't do that. But the fact is that all you need is one, and you book one, and then it's like a snowball rolling down. It just keeps going, and it can't stop. You can't be stopped. And just like in your writing, you can get any job you want. Tomorrow, the writing job ends, you'll get another writing job. It'll always happen. Why? Because you're booking the fucking writing jobs. People are saying, wow, Owen Smith always books the jobs. I guess people love him. Let's put him in here. They're not hiring you on the sitcoms because they don't have any evidence that you're the guy who goes in and does that. And once they do, it's all over. And everything's going to happen the way you want it to happen.
You laughing?
Well, no, it's just, it's a catch-22, you know? It's a tricky thing. You know, you can do a thing if you can do the thing. If you can do the thing, then you can do the thing.
Yeah, but it's...
Alonzo Bowden told me.
You have to go back and listen to that and go, what the fuck?
Well, Alonzo Bowden told me one time.
What is that?
Right when he was, you know, he won Last Comic Standing and he was having all these, you know, successful things happen to him. He told me outside of the Laugh Factory, he was smoking a cigarette. And I'll never forget, he goes, you're out till you're in. It was just that simple.
Yeah, but, you know, Alonzo Bowden, again, here I'm prefacing it and you guys are going to laugh. Amazing guy.
Right. Oh, boy.
Amazing guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But if Alonzo were sitting here and I said, tell me how much money you made as an actor and how much money you made as a stand-up, it would be like 99.999999% to 0.0001%.
Right.
And Alonzo Bowden... No one's disputing that he is a funny motherfucker. No one's disputing that he headlines all over the country.
Right.
No one's disputing that people know who he is. But the fact is, if you're going to break into that top 10 in your area of the world of comedy, you have to get on television. You have to have millions of people see you in some way. And if you don't, you're always going to be headlining Ha Ha's Chuckle Hut in... you know, Fayetteville, you know, North Carolina or wherever it is. And that's just the way it is.
Right.
You're not going to get where you have to get in You have to have enough. Just like if you're somebody who wants to be work at MTV, you have to get into MTV. You have to get the interview, and you have to get in
right.
and make it happen. And I think that that's what's missing from so many people out there that just they don't understand what it takes to. And it's very simple. And what's crazy about our world, and you know this more than anything else because you've been a showrunner, this is how crazy it is if you're an actor or a comedian trying to get an acting job. This is mind-blowing. You, in pilot season, you only have to fool the people four times for 5 minutes each time, and right. you can be on television for 7 years. You right. go in as a comedian or as a whatever, a straight actor. You audition first for the casting director.
Right.
5 minutes. You do your thing. Maybe she has you do it a different way. You impress her. She makes the call. We're taking you to producers.
Right.
Then the guy or girl comes in for 5 minutes, and Ollie LeRoy is in the room with a bunch of other producers and maybe the star.
Right.
And you do your 5 minutes. You blow them away. Maybe they tell you to leave the room and come back and do it a different way or give you directions, but sometimes they don't. And then you get the next call. You are testing for the studio that's yep. deficiting the show. Okay, here's the sides. You're going to come in. There's going to be the studio executives, the same person. Ali's going to be there. Chris Rock's going to be there. The casting director is going to be there. And we're all going to be here, and these are the sides. We'll work with you before the test a little bit just to make sure you're okay. But 5 minutes, go in, knock it out. You go into your 5 minutes, you finish. On your 15th minute, you leave, you get home, your manager agent calls you. You're going to the network.
Right.
Your last stop. All you got to do is kill for 5 minutes here, and you got it. You go in for 5 minutes. There's all the people you saw before, and now there's the network executives and the network president. And you go in, and you do what you did before or better, and guess what? You get the call, and you got the gig. And somebody like Beth Bears from Two Broke Girls, and if you look her up, everybody listening on IMDb, look up her IMDb profile the last 3 years before Two Broke Girls. You'll find one guest shot on a show. I think it was Castle. Okay, one guest appearance.
Right.
I don't even know if the character had a name. Okay, she had over 100 auditions in 3 or 4 years, booked as many episodes
right.
as a dead guy. Okay, goes into Two Broke Girls and gets the gig. Can you guys imagine? And you're married. And you're about to get married, mm-hmm. and I don't know your status. But the point being, Owen, can you imagine meeting your girl, and you have 5 4-minute meetings with her, and you have to decide whether you're going to get married or not? Would you get married?
No.
No.
Definitely not.
Okay, but the network system is designed. This is what kills me, gets me so frustrated. The network system is designed for you comedians and you actors to beat the fucking system. You only have to do 4 5-minute things and you can be a millionaire and have all your work, your great art can be showcased in front of millions of people. And you don't even have to do hours and hours in front of them to fool them. You know, you just have to do that and you can get the job. How easy is that?
Not very.
No.
Not very.
Not very.
Apparently, it's very difficult. How do you guys end your podcast?
I say school's out.
That's it.
That's it. And you're shut down. Out. No plugs, nothing?
Plugs.
Oh, yeah. You want to plug? Yeah, we say, yeah. Where are you? Where can people find you?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Where can people find you?
I'll be performing in the belly room.
Barry's going to do a hot 7.
No, but I seriously, if you know all of your listeners, I feel so strongly about this, and it sounds selfish or egotistical or whatever, but I did this industry standard podcast for a reason. I wanted to help people, and all the podcasts I've been on, you know, over 2 million people have listened to these. Nobody knows who the fuck I am. Nobody knows the guests that, who I have on. But there's a message in these things that really helps, and it really can make a difference for you. And it's not, I'm not talking about me, but just the people that their stories, these network presidents. Dr. Phil was homeless, living in a car with his father when he was a teenager. Chris Albrecht, the president of HBO and Starz, lived in a 99-seat theater because he didn't have enough money for rent in New York City. He was doing a comedy act with Bob Zemuda with a banana and a jar of Vaseline, and he had to go to a different store every single night so people wouldn't think he was an alternative gay guy. Okay, there's all these stories of people and how they went to the next level. Peter Engel laid down on the floor of the carpet of Brandon Tartikoff's office until Brandon said, I'm going to pick up Saved by the Bell. So everybody has a story of how they got to the next level that relates to your life, whatever you're doing in your career, of how to get from, you know, humble beginnings to the next level. And I think that it's a, you know, it's really valuable tool, and it's free, and you should subscribe. I think you'd really enjoy it. And thank you guys so much for having me. I know that 2 out of 3 of you wanted me here. I really appreciate it. I'm honored. I'm honored to be here.
Barry Katz, industry standard. That's kind of cool. All right. What about us? Where do we find us?
Let's see. OwenSmithLive.com is the website. At OwenSmith4Real on all things social. But you can find the podcast at, well, you're listening to it. Like, why would we tell people where to find it if you're listening to it?
Because people aren't smart sometimes.
But if you are listening to it, we need you to go subscribe and write a review.
Yes.
And tell people about
it. Yes, you. You. Yes, you. I want you to subscribe. I want you to write. Don't wait for some other person to do it. I want you to do it. Yes, you do it. Yes, I'm talking to you. I want you to subscribe. You're already on the website. So just go and, you know, iTunes or Stitcher. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher.
Yeah.
Look us up, Alias Smith and Leroy.
Click the button.
Put us on a playlist on Stitcher. Subscribe to us on iTunes.
Listen to us when you work out.
You know what's great? You know, the whole podcast. It's been Alias Leroy and Smith.
Alias
but
Smith
on
and
the
Leroy.
Podcast, it's Smith and Leroy, which is great. So in the end, you got the first title card.
Ali's never been speechless.
I was when Lisa Ray was here. Was it Lisa Ray or was it? Who was
Lisa
it? Was
Ray,
it was Lisa
Tamla
Ray.
Jones.
I think
Debbie
Lisa Ray
Allen.
Shut me
Salaman,
down.
Salamine.
Saladin.
Saladin. All right. That's that. I'm on the web someplace. You'll find me. Wow.
Yeah, man.
Huh?
That's what he's come to.
Yeah, man.
I thought we said that you ain't supposed to do I told you so. I thought that was
I didn't say. Well, we just learned
that.
That's been a big mistake in my career because I will do an I told you so. Ali can tell you. Told you so. I can't wait to be like, and I'll just do it with the look.
Yeah.
I'll look you right in your face like,
yeah, don't do I told you so.
Yeah, I just learned something new. I learned so many new things.
And we learned a lot.
I learned I need to book a sitcom, apparently.
Well,
I'm going to create my own. That's what I'm going to do.
You got to make a decision about what you want to do and how you want to go about doing it.
Create my own, man. I can't, the one I didn't get this year, I'll tell you, he was referring to, I tested for a sitcom called One Big Happy.
I thought it was going to be called Not Owen.
No. Called Not Owen. So I was fortunate enough and honored to be able to test for, and some people.
Not studio.
Did Barry make that happen for you?
Barry facilitated it.
Did you get to network or studio level?
What ended up happening? Yeah, let me. I can tell you the story real quick.
Can we just quit? Keep interrupting with questions.
Yes, please do. I do that to people all the time. That's my favorite shit to do. And the person's always trying to get through it. And then they removed the stitches.
So you went to the first one, then you got the second one.
Well, I'm
and
trying
then,
to tell you. Okay,
so what happened after the fourth one?
All right. So then
Jesus
said,
"Went all the way. What happened?"
I'm trying to tell you about when I was with the Lord. It's called One Big Happy. It was written by Liz. I want to say Feldman is her name. Very talented, super funny from the Ellen camp. And I got a call to come in and read, I think, Julie Ashton. Yes, Julie Ashton, the great Julie Ashton. I love her to death. Casting director. Always brings me in for things. And she bought me in. It was in this little hot trailer. I did my audition. And I was working on Arsenio at the time. So I actually snuck out to audition no one knows this, but the show's gone now, so I can tell you. We were during rehearsal, and I just snuck out, drove over to Burbank. Should I be saying this?
Yeah, you can say it.
Yeah, show's off. Drove over to Burbank, auditioned.
This may have been the day things went south.
I know, man. Yeah. No, well, you know.
Where's Owen?
And my man, shout out to my man Kevin Lynn, my roommate over there in our office. He covered for me. It was fantastic. I auditioned. I told them that, and Barry called them and let them know that I was, you know, in between, you know, gigs. So they were aware of my situation, ushered me right in, did my audition, left, didn't think anything about it. They tested another person. Then I found out that they were leaning back toward me. I want to give a shout out to Ian Edwards. Like, a lot of people gave me great recommendations to Liz. Now, I haven't been acting since I've been writing for a while, so I was, you know. So they called me back in to do another one with the girl who got the gig, and we were taped, and they coached us on what they wanted. I did the thing, left, felt good about it, found out that I would be testing.
Right.
So they sent my test to the studio first.
Right.
There was that tape.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, cool. I'm going to be like, oh, this would be great. Then I went to network, but they sent the same tape to network.
Right.
And it was between me and Vanessa Williams' brother, Michael Williams. He was Crazy Eyes in.
Yeah, yeah.
Thing.
Yeah,
and, yeah, you know, yeah. And so there's he's great and is more.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. And there's more like documented proof of him being, you know, an actor in sitcoms. So he got it, you know what I mean? And it was great. But that was the thing he was referring to this year. I thought I had a really good chance of getting it, but I didn't get
but
it.
But there's that thing you learn that, okay, you have to get it to get it, but to get it.
Yeah.
You know what
but
I'm
I,
saying?
But, I, like, but I've it. Only, but I've only in my acting career, I've only tested for two shows. And it was one when I first got here and that one. I've
How many years between?
Shit, like 8.
Wow.
So I always attributed it to just, I love my agents and stuff, but they just didn't have access for me to go in for those. I've guest starred on things and I've done things of that nature, but to be so, but that could be my hustle too. Like, I could not be working toward whatever you're supposed to do that. I just was like,
well, know. I mean, you know, and here's another thing, just like an actor thing. And this is not to make you feel any better, but the reality of, when you're being cast, mm-hmm. and they have made a choice. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, if the network decides they like some woman for one reason or another, and, you know, your character, somebody that's going to be playing against her in scenes, they start looking at a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be funny. You know, how tall is this person? How do you know, what's their chemistry? You know, somebody else might have a different chemistry. So it's all of these variables that really don't have anything to do with your ability to perform.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing, mm-hmm. in terms of getting on television, but what your chemistry is with somebody, you know, what your ability is to improvise or how you kind of come off. So there's all of these variables that are being counted in, and like Barry said, the interesting thing is they go with the things that make them feel safest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The things that make them feel most sure. You know, if they got one question in their mind, you know, that shit's like proving a murder case.
Right.
You know, if they got one question in their mind, they can't give you the gig.
Yeah, you see it. So, but the good news is the show did get picked up for 6 episodes, so congratulations to them. And, you know, hopefully I'll be able to create my own thing and be competing against
Well, you got Barry. Well, you know, clearly the key is to fire him, and then apparently you'll be fine.
But you know, all those people fired Barry after they were household names.
Right, right.
And so as soon as they know me, Barry, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying, bub? Clock's ticking. I can feel it.
All right, so that was Barry.
He's nervous.
I learned a lot. Some great back and forth, man. That was a really, really great conversation.
Yes.
First white guy on the podcast.
First white guy. Inaugural.
First white person.
Inaugural
white
Caucasian.
Can we say white person, please?
Yes. Okay, first white person.
First white person.
And first Jewish person.
Person. No.
Callie Hawkins. Is half Jewish.
Half Jewish, right.
So good. And I really was scared to even say that out loud.
Right.
Just I'm like,
well, she'll have it erased from the podcast.
Yeah.
She's monitoring this.
But
I'm
yeah,
sure.
Man, white people don't be afraid to come talk to us. Yeah, it's all happening. Yeah. We're gonna have a whole white person.
Yeah,
edition.
We like talking to people of color and white
yes,
as a color.
The Wire season 2 edition.
All right, so that's it. Great. So follow us. How do you
Smith and Leroy? Alias Smith and Leroy. Right. Follow us on Alias at Alias Smith and Leroy yeah. on Twitter. We were trending on something the other day
at the Griot.
At the mm-hmm. Griot. Yeah. So we're doing something right.
Doing something
and,
right. Shout outs to the Griot.
Shout outs to the Griot. How you spell Griot?
G-R-I-O.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, Chatterati.
Thought I might have had a silent
we were,
T
we
in
were
there.
Trending on the Chatterati.
That's what I'm talking about. Shout out to Chatterati. And then you can follow and just go to the website to follow Ali.
Yeah, I ain't telling you all.
But my new website is up. It's Owen Smith Live. But all whatever. But just subscribe to our thing, man.
Subscribe, like, put us comment.
In a, you got to put us in a playlist and on, you gotta write on a Stitcher. Comment. That's for the Android, and yes, write comments on the iTunes.
Good, bad, and different. Good, bad, we don't care. Exactly. Just talk about it.
Just
you know, how can we improve?
You know what?
If you want Ali to talk less, and you want me to talk more,
say so.
You can say so.
If you want me to stop saying big words,
if you want Ali, if you want Ali to stop saying big words,
we could start a contest of landscapes in
particular. Yeah. If you count how many landscapes in particular,
y'all want me to quit asking questions, trying to sound like I'm all smart and whatever. I'm sorry, I can't help it. I'm actually like that.
He's learning.
He's learned.
I'm learned it.
Learned it. College dropouts are always smart.
Yeah, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm just like that. It's
somebody
not,
give him a degree so he can start getting dumb. Jesus. Give you an honorary. Give you
a
P. Diddy.
Yeah.
Honorary doctorate.
An honorary doctorate.
All of a sudden,
Jesus.
He's like quiet.
I know.
Doesn't say sitting anything.
In the corner.
All right.
He ponders. That's, you know.
Over there pondering.
You move into pondering.
All right. We're going to see if we can get a phone job for Kali.
Yes.
Hey, yes.
Google Voice sex line.
And starting a little
oh boy.
Side gig.
Oh boy. You might have to give everybody. God, no. Close the door. Oh no.
Gotcha.
She's ruining keyboards all over. Gee, man.
I know.
All right. So yeah,
Kali voice.
Well,
we
you.
Should give everybody like 30 seconds of Kali sex talk.
Not this podcast. Time. We're going, yeah.
Next podcast.
Next one. We'll work it in. We'll work it in.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We'll work it in. All right. The girls, too.
I don't discriminate.
Hey. That's what I'm talking about. We're equal opportunity.
Yeah, it's the new frontier.
Keyboard ruiners. That's right.
Everybody can get
anybody
it.
Anybody and everybody.
Anybody can get it.
All right. We got a feature beat. What is it, man?
Feature beat this week is Alex T. Chio.
Chio.
Third base versus the JBs. Monty Hall versus Pass the Peas.
Chio.
It's pretty funky.
That's pretty funky. We like that.
Are we going to say why we chose it?
Yeah, because third base is a Jewish rap group, and then the JBs is a black band. And I thought it was apropos for Barry.
Cats.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, man.
We're just entirely discounting all of the white people that he works with.
Oh, no, he works with a lot of white folks, but I'm just saying he's helped a lot of brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
And
I hope I said that right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Well, he's helping you.
Yeah.
All right, that's one.
Hey, man.
That's all that really
Things
matters,
happen.
Right?
As soon as I'm household, baby.
Boom, you're out.
<I'll> stick it. You know what I mean?
All right, that's it. We're Alias Smith and Leroy. I'm Leroy.
I'm Smith.
I'm Kali.
Ooh. And here we go. That's the end of the show.
All right.
Blah. Peace.
This place has everything. Come on, I show you.
Slow track starts soothing you light skin. Steps into the picture, program is fixed. The mix will let you get your hand around Ray's face, dripping from moisture. Stroking the neck, you suspect that's your voice. Her approval, whipping and flipping your pelvis. While I step in, step off, you get selfish. Yours for the take home, so she can take up space at your place. But then you start to wake up, groove goes to fade. Introductions are made, love, my name is Search. Let's step for some shade in the dance hall. Solo spot to drop her bass and I'll follow. Feed on a focus. face. I spoke this figure of speech supposed to sway those who seek such wisdom, wildly working towards a woman. Therefore, she's drawn to the other man's intentions of a G trying to snuff me. Announced presence in the house of Mr. Buffy. Smoke filled a tight pack system. A rack of skirt kit for a victim. A three-stage pleasure on a principle. As I step and drop a syllable. A syllabus spoken by the third on school. And a female to impale, push up smooth. In turn, a sperm desire. That all, another episode in the dance hall. Song slow, low tempo kicks lyrics to those who show a need to step to a deaf third baseman. A wink of an eye, the smile of the face, and I'm D-O-W-N to send shockwaves up the spine. While the clock saves just enough ticks to lick neck to your lips. Mouth to mouth, palm upon hips. Sigh of pleasure measures the heat up. Nibble my neck, the affection I eat up. Dine like a diner, hot enough to simmer. Jam comes to a close, come give a number of seven. In regard to the residents, told the mob that I slobbed and showed evidence. Lipstick on the grill, a digit to call. Another love struck, stuck to the wall of the dance hall. Records played, swayed over smoothly, soothing a listener. Undergoes one of death of a dancer. To twist over your eyes as your liquor. Swipe panic on a dance hall picture. Motion flows, scene gets hectic. Freak of bones like an epileptic. Melody moves scenario to chaos. Pursue principles and then you shoot lobbies. So called it's booth the rise and fall. Step into the AM in a dance hall.
This episode of Alias Smith and the Roy, compliments of Producers Guild of America.